You're listening to Let's Get Legal, hosted by John Hansen and powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Today's show is sponsored by the law offices of Jeffrey A. Rabin and Associates, attorney Christian Luciano from Vogelzang Law, and attorney Jim Fabrini at WindyCityLawFirm.com. Now, here's John Hansen, and let's get legal.
At 110 on WGN. Oh, a very pleasant Saturday afternoon, everyone. Here in July, mid-July, sure feels like it outside. Hope you've had a good week, good weekend. And any of the folks that were going to join us at the Minced Rascals live broadcast last night in Ottawa, I know we were all so bummed when the event had to be postponed. I was raring and ready to go. So if you are one of those ticket holders, I'm sure they're working on a plan to reschedule that sucker. But it was going to be a lot of fun down in Ottawa, but we couldn't make it happen due to the weather. And as some of us got a lot of storms last night, it was probably the right call, as I'm sure you all understand. But I miss seeing you there. We're with you till 3 o'clock here this afternoon, as we do it normally. And we're going to say hello to a new guest to this program, Jeff Rabin. How are you doing, my friend?
John, it's a pleasure to be on WGN. I grew up with WGN, with the Cubs, the Bears, Jack Brickhouse, Bob Collins, all the way up. And this is really a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you here. I also grew up on
WGN. And now John Hansen.
And now John Hansen. There's a lot of Johns here. We got John Landecker. We got John Williams, Stephen Johnny. So I'll take the fourth rank of John here. That's fine with me. You do a lot of great work. And let's focus today first on what you do in the world of Social Security. And I just want to get some definitions down for us before we get started. Because, boy, this is confusing. SSDI, what does that stand for?
Social Security Disability Insurance.
Okay.
So when you work and you get your paycheck is never what the boss promised because you've got a lot of lines on that stub. One line says federal withholding, one line says state withholding, one line says OASDI, Old Age Survivors and Disability Insurance. And that's your payment of your share of the premium to the Social Security Administration to buy insurance in case your medical problems become so bad that you can't work.
And is that
OASDI.
Does that cover also what we get when we reach retirement age?
It covers retirement. It covers survivors. It covers disability. And then there's a second line on there called Medicare. And that helps fund the Medicare program.
So before we even move on here, we are paying into this program where if we are disabled, we get paid based on our investments that we put into this program. I'm sure a formula and everything, but I guess what I'm trying to say is we've earned the right to get disability insurance if we deserve it.
Well, you've certainly earned the right to apply. And what it's so sad that I talk to people every day who don't even know that the benefit exists. They've worked 5, 10, 20 years paying their taxes, being good citizens, and they know they're going to get a retirement benefit, but they don't know, oh my gosh, if I pass away, my wife and my dependent kids might get benefits, or if I become disabled and I can't work, I do have the right to apply for a benefit program.
So a lot of what we're doing here today is just educating people to the fact that they may be entitled to money from this fund that they have paid into, or their kids or wife might be able to collect on this as well, and they don't even know it.
They don't even know it.
Okay, so that's SSDI broadly. What is SSI then?
So Supplemental Security Income came about in 1971 when there were a series of pictorials in the old Look and Life magazines about the elderly poor in the North who were getting some help from their communities and their cities, and the elderly poor in the South who weren't and were living in shanties and lean-tos and literally using cat food tins as saucers. Mm. So Congress thought this was bad.
Yeah.
So they enacted SSI to help the elderly poor and then expanded it to help the disabled poor.
But it's different than the general Social Security program, or it's an add-on to it?
Sort of an add-on. The medical test is exactly the same. The second requirement for SSI is that you be indigent, and it's a very strict definition that hasn't changed since 1979.
So broadly speaking, who do you help? Who calls you at 312-431-1000? They get Jeff Rabin, and you help them with what?
So the first thing we ask people is, why aren't you working? because the medical test is very stringent.
Mm-hmm.
So our first question always is, what do you believe is the medical problem that makes it impossible for you to function in a job? Now, some people just say, well, I've got hypertension. Well, it's a really serious medical problem.
Of course.
But it doesn't stop you from working. So most people who call have serious medical conditions, but they're not going to reach that threshold of proving permanent and total disability.
One quick stop in right there. Sorry to interrupt, Jeff. There's going to be a lot of this today. Do you have to, in order to qualify, have something that prevents you from any work? Or could it be you're not doing the job you used to have? Do you see what I'm asking here?
It's the most common question we get. Your own job is generally the test for people who are applying for private corporate disability insurance plans. Social Security's test is much more strict. It requires that we prove that you are unable to perform any what they call substantial gainful activity for a period that's lasted or expected to last at least a year. Now, they do take into consideration age and work experience and education. But not really until you hit 50, a little more at 55, a little more at 60, with the understanding that it's harder for people who can't do their old job and they're 60 years old to find other types of work that they could perform. But generally, especially for anybody under 50, it's proving the inability to perform any type of full-time work activity available in the national economy. It's a very strict test.
It's a high bar to reach. Is that why people maybe don't call? They feel like, well, that can't possibly be me. I won't hit that test, or they just don't even know the test exists in the first place. I don't know.
Oftentimes people call me and they say, I was never going to apply, but my friend heard about the program and she pushed me to apply. And then they call us and we walk through. Everybody that calls us gets a free at least 10 or 15 minute consultation with my intake team. And we'll explain, yes, you have a case, we should pursue it, or no, and here's why. And everybody gets an explanation.
Jeff, do most people call you when they're just starting the process, or maybe after they've been denied by the government?
So huge evolution over all the years that I've been doing this. When I first began doing this in the 80s and 90s, we rarely were ever hired by anybody until they'd been denied. Now, because of several changes, when somebody says, don't hire me until you've been denied, I actually consider that to be negligent legal work.
Oh, really?
Because the amount of material that gets processed at the initial application level, including what we call the killer form, the activities of daily living questionnaire, can really impact what happens a year later when you get in front of a judge. The other thing that's really critical and sort of an evolution in the law, when I began, we would get medical reports, and those reports were really critical to the outcome. Now the focus is much, much more, and I'm sure we'll get into this mm-hmm. later, on medical records and charts. So the earlier we can teach somebody what is important in their charts, the more time they have to go to the doctors, the more the charts will be documenting what's really happening, and the better chance we have of winning their claim.
Well, you want a strong claim when they make it initially, is what you're saying. You want a broad-based, well-formed, put-together, coherent thing that you're going to present to the government on whether this person should collect or not. You don't want to be helping after a denial, which I'm sure the appeals process, I don't know if it just takes forever, or if then the burden is on, more burden is on you to prove why the appeal was wrong. So you want to be there on the onset of this.
So what we want to do is educate clients. We spend a lot of time teaching people, these are the issues in your case. Actually, all I care when they come to us is that they're seeing the right doctors. We'll teach them then the specific symptoms that are going to be most impactful in their claim. And then during the year, year and a half that it takes to work through the two or three steps before we see a judge, they have plenty of time to go to the doctor, emphasize those symptoms, get treatment. If they don't improve, then we have a documented claim for the judge.
Did you say 2 or 3 years before they get in front of a judge?
It's about a year and a half, at least. And that's a big improvement. If I had come here 10 years ago, I would have told you 2.5 years before you see a judge. There were times in my career where it's been 2.5 years just for the third level. Right now, if I file an application today, this is July of 2025, because of the backlog and layoffs, it's not likely in Illinois to be picked up by an adjudicator until February or March of next year. And we'll get a decision shortly after that. And then if we lose, we go to the second step called reconsideration. That's about another 6 to 8 months.
Okay.
Then what's sped up since the pandemic, we go to the third step, which is the hearing before the administrative law judge. And that usually happens within 4 to 6 months of that level.
But a strong claim from the start, you might get an answer in 6 or 8 months in your favor that helps you start collecting what you've deserved.
We win probably 20% of our new client intake at the first level every month.
20%, you said?
Yeah.
In the first month?
Yeah. Well, no.
Oh, in the first level?
Of the first level.
Okay. 312-981-7200. We are getting some calls and texts about this. Jeff Rabin is here. RKBlegal.com. The number to reach him, 312-431-1000. Jeff, we got a lot more to get to. Hang on right here. You're not going anywhere. Eli, lock him to the chair. We're going to take a quick commercial break. More after this on WGN. Jeff Rabin here, rkblegal.com. 312-431-1000 is how you visit him. He helps you with claims for SSDI and SSI. And Jeff, the message is call you before you start the claim and call you to help you get the claim, make sure you get or do the best you can, put the best face forward at the initial level of things, right?
Absolutely. In fact, we have 1.5 staff people whose only jobs are to do applications for people.
1.5 staff people?
Yeah.
That poor half person, yeah.
She does other things.
She does other things, too. Yeah, exactly. Let's go to the phone lines. Carol, you are on WGN. Hi, Carol. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Jen?
We're doing well. Thank you for calling today. What can we help you with?
Well, I'm recently a widow.
Oh, I'm sorry, Carol.
Thank you. And I'm collecting my husband's Social Security, but I also work. Just recently, I've been having some medical issues, and it's becoming hard to do my job. My question was, is if I try to go in for disability Social Security, can I still have my husband's Social Security also?
That's a good question. Jeff?
Hi, Carol. Thank you for calling. Hi. So the general rule is you get whichever benefit program pays you the most. So if your survivor benefits or your widow's benefits are greater than your own SSDI benefit, then you would just stay with the program that you're on. Now, the only advantage could be, depending on your age, if you were to qualify for SSDI, you would get Medicare earlier. Because Medicare is a secondary benefit to SSDI. It kicks in 29 months after Social Security finds that you became totally disabled. So if you were, God forbid, hit by a car today and were in July, Social Security doesn't pay for the first 5 months, August, September, October, November, December. Your benefits would begin January of 2026. Medicare would kick in January of 2028.
Oh, okay. Is there a way that you can work through the calculations or at least just guess along with Carol to figure out what her SSDI would pay out, or do you not know until you apply?
There's no way for me to know, but Carol can absolutely find out. And this is really important for everybody listening. If you have not gone onto Social Security's website at ssa.gov and created your own My Social Security account, that's your project for when the rain starts and you can't go outside again.
ssa.gov, where you can see what your benefits are going to be.
You can get notices from Social Security. Remember the green form that we used to get in the mail years ago? It's all online. And it's also for people who are getting disability. It's your way to communicate things like address changes or return to work and information that you have to convey to Social Security. The easiest, most efficient, and safest way to do it is at ssa.gov. Open up your My Social Security account.
Carol, that sound good to at least figure out if that benefit's going to be less or more than what you have already?
Absolutely.
All right.
I know right now with my husband's Social Security that I'm receiving as the benefit, and my Social Security is when I retire, mine is a lot less. He made a little more money than I do right now. So, and I'm actually still working.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Right, right, right. Well, just go there, and then I'm going to give you Jeff's number again just so you have it, Carol. You can write it down if you need to follow up with him. That's always a good idea, too.
Will do.
312-431-1000. Carol, sorry about your loss, but thanks for calling today, okay?
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, Jen.
Yeah,
thank
take
you.
Care.
Bye-bye.
847, what about the chronically mentally ill, or folks with mental illness? Does SSDI cover some of those?
There is a whole section in Social Security's called Listings of Impairments, their technical medical guideline, that just deals with mental impairments. That's been a major focus in my law practice for many years, hence my involvement with the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, for decades now. So, yes, we represent many people with everything from depression, anxiety, bipolar, schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, OCD, a whole panoply of medical mental health issues.
I got a dumb question. Can you be on SSDI for just like a year or two while you're dealing with maybe a mental illness or a physical illness, and then the expectation is I'm going to go back to work after that? Is that how that works for a lot of people?
So let me tell you the way I approach my younger clients.
Okay.
If I have somebody, say, in their 20s or early 30s, and we're either in a Microsoft Teams chat or they're actually in my office and their parents are often with them, I tell you, here's my deal. I don't work and pay my taxes to get you SSI for the rest of your life. This program only pays $967 a month. It's not enough for anybody to live on. So what we're going to do for you, we're going to treat this as a time program, give you time to treat really intensely, give you some minimal financial support, secure your access to the healthcare system, and then you're going to recover, retrain, and return to work. And when you call me and tell me you've got that $50,000 a year job, how do I get off of SSI? That's when your dad takes me out for a beer, because that's when we'll have won your case.
That's awesome. And I think it's a good way to put it, right? Like, this is designed to be a certain thing and not everything for everybody.
Some people are never going to get better. They have horrible medical problems, and they're just not going to improve, and this is their lifeline. But for many people, it's a time program. It gives them a security blanket, not a wealthy one. People say, oh my gosh, you live so great on Social Security disability. The average SSDI check's $1,500, $1,590 basically.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's living comfortably on $1,500 a month. But they can certainly get by, and it's their safety net.
Okay, we got some other text questions, some calls too, but we got to hit the news right now. David, hang on the line. Jeff, you stay right here. And if you're scooting out of your car, 312-431-1000. 312-431-1000 is how you reach Jeff Rabin. More with him after the news on WGN. 720 WGN 136 here. Jeff Rabin in studio, rkblegal.com. He helps people apply for their SSDI or SSI, or if they've lost an appeal, or to appeal it. But ideally, you call him as you begin that process of applying for SSDI and SSI. Jeff, I've already now tapped your extensive knowledge of Social Security. Do you get so many questions from everyone, even if it's not SSDI or SSI, they think you know everything about Social Security and Medicare?
One of my best friends every day is Google, because I don't know everything about retirement, and I don't know everything about Medicare, and I don't know everything about Medicaid. I know a little bit about a lot of it, but I'm constantly quickly Googling answers to give to people.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good. I appreciate you admitting. But you know the SSDI and SSI stuff front to back.
Been doing it for a long time.
David has a quick question. I think it's more of a general one. David, let's save you a little work here today.
What a segue that was. my question is, I turned 65 this month.
65 or 55?
65.
Okay.
And I am gainfully employed, covered with health insurance, and I have an HSA. And I'm wondering if I absolutely have to sign up for Medicare.
No, you do not. As long as you're covered by another health insurance program, you can defer applying for Medicare. However, once you retire from that job, or if the company drops their health insurance coverage, then you'll be on the clock to get a Medicare application in, which is just going online. It takes about 5 minutes.
Do you have to do anything like telling the government, I am still working, I don't need it, or get a card at least or anything? Or no, you don't have to do it till you're
out. I don't think you have to do anything. You might, they might reach out. I mean, when I hit 65, I just went and did it automatically. But so I'm not really sure, but there's not going to be an issue as long as he's working and he's covered by another plan.
Yeah, David, my dad worked till he was 72, and they all figured it out afterwards. So,
right. Well, that was my point. Is I'm planning on working till 70, but I keep hearing from other people that even if I don't sign up, I get a lifetime penalty.
No, not as long as you're covered by another plan.
Okay.
All right.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David. I appreciate it. Tony texted in. He says, how long does it take to apply and begin receiving benefits for a mental health condition? Tony's specifically asking about bipolar, which we can tackle generally or specifically however you want, Jeff. And then he wants to know, what do you charge for your services? Fair questions.
So let's take the second one first and get that out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
All attorneys who work in this field charge the same thing. We all work on a contingency fee. That is, if we do not win, we do not get paid. When we win, our fee is the lesser of 25% of the initial back benefit check or the commissioner's cap. Right now, the commissioner's cap is $9,200. So it's 25% of that first benefit check or $9,200, whichever is smaller.
And only if they get the benefit.
And only if they get the benefit. So if somebody's back benefit is $2,000, the attorney fee is $500.
Okay.
Social Security sends it right to us. My clients don't even write a check out for their fee unless there's some kind of rare mix-up.
So it's not like in perpetuity you're getting a percentage of what they earn for the rest of their life for some of them. No.
I'd have retired a long time ago.
You get the back pay. So that's actually a great question about that. And I know we have the first part to get to in a second. But if I'm applying, like you mentioned, these multiple months in order to get approved, is that the back check then? Once the application gets initiated versus the decision is made, you get back paid up to when you started the application?
It could actually, if it's SSDI, back to your date of onset, but there's limits on that.
Uh-huh.
So the general concept you're describing is correct.
Okay.
So judges say lawyers delay cases because we want a larger back benefit. Those are judges who've never run a business.
Right.
I have bills and payroll and insurance and rent. I want to get my people benefits as quickly as I can because those are the ones that are going to send me more business, and that's also how we pay the bills.
Right. And you've told me off the air, I hope you don't mind me sharing, that you help a lot of people out in cases that other lawyers won't take.
So this is a business. We have bills to pay. There are Social Security lawyers, and this is a business decision, mm-hmm. who really try to limit their practices, for example, just to SSDI cases because they pay more. Some people like to limit their practices just to people over 50 because there's more age consideration and your chances of success are greater. That's never been the practice or the thinking at our law firm. Both myself and the attorneys that work with me, we want to help anybody that we think has a valid claim. Now, we turn away a lot of people, but that's because we don't think they have a claim that they should pursue or
right.
can pursue.
But maybe when turn away is the wrong word. You just say, hey, look, I don't think you're going to win this
thing. We educate them on alternatives.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when we take a case, we're going to fight that case regardless of whether they're getting $100 a month or $3,000 a month.
And you'll talk to everyone, at least to get an initial chat through, right?
I have a really remarkable intake team headed up by Kelly, and Kelly will give everybody that 10 or 15 minutes to really understand what the issues are. And many, many times we just say, go try this, and if that works, then call us back.
Well, I like that too. Like if it's a simple thing, hey, try this, see what happens. Don't spend your money here yet. And I shouldn't even say spend your money. You're not getting paid unless they win their case.
What we don't want people to do is waste time.
Yeah.
If somebody waits, has a very weak case, and they wait 2 years to get through this process and then lose, they're now 2 years out of the workforce. They're 2 years out of that habit of getting up in the morning and being productive, and to restart their life at that point's way harder. I won't drag people through this unless I really think this is the right choice for them.
Okay, before I forget, because I have other questions already in my head, let's get to Tony's first part.
Timing.
How long does it take to apply and begin receiving benefits for a mental health condition, specifically bipolar?
So, truly, mental health, the nature of the medical problem isn't the issue. The issue is the number of applications and the decreased staff at Social Security.
They don't rush you along for something that is, quote-unquote, more severe than something that maybe isn't.
There's only three ways, really, to get a case approved more quickly than what I described earlier. The 8 or 10 months at initial, or 12 months at initial, 8 to 10 months at recon, and 6 months to see a judge. If you are homeless, they will expedite cases.
Mm-hmm.
If you're facing imminent death, they will try to expedite the case. Mm. And then there are people who have what they call a compassionate allowance condition. And this was actually started by a commissioner who was actually one of the last good ones named Michael Astrew. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, there's some conditions we just pay all the time. And if we pay them all the time, why are we putting people through all this nonsense? Let's just pay them. And these are conditions that are really obvious. Brain cancer, Alzheimer's, Lou Gehrig's disease, Huntington's disease, very obvious cases that people aren't going to recover from.
A doctor says you have this. What are we wasting months for?
Going to get expedited.
And that also wastes the government's time. What are we doing here?
That was the commissioner's point. There's now about 240 different conditions. Most of them you've never heard of. They have medical names 16 letters long.
Mm-hmm.
But the obvious ones like brain cancer, they do try to expedite those cases. The key is how you communicate to Social Security that, hey, this is a compassionate allowance case.
Okay. The 815 has a point about the sign up for the RX program, the drug program on Medicare, even if he isn't the amount of meds, the lifetime penalty. Okay. And tell you what, I know a Medicare person. I'm going to get an answer on that for sure, Jeff, not to put you on the spot or make you answer things that are a little bit outside of your realm. And of course, there's always Google, and you can always call these offices, although you might be on the line for a while, huh, Jeff?
Being on hold for Social Security is sort of the name of the game, and all of my team know how to multitask, but we're routinely on hold from 30 to 45 minutes. The other day, one of my secretaries on hold for 62 minutes.
Jeez.
Sometimes you're on hold for 45 minutes and they hang up. The system is seriously understaffed, just so people are aware.
Yeah.
Right now, Social Security is staffed at 2009 levels. So if you consider how many people each month from 2009 to 2025 have gone on retirement with baby boomers, gone on disability, survivors, tens of thousands of people a month, and we're staffed at levels 16 years ago. And it's getting worse because of DOGE and the administration's pressure.
I will say, having had to deal with Social Security recently, I went online, ssa.gov. It was a well-run website, which I was kind of surprised about. And I got an appointment, and the appointment went very smoothly in terms of just I went to the center when I was told to, and boom, it was packed. And boom, as soon as my time came, I got called up to the front. So I'd imagine you recommend people make appointments when they can.
Making an appointment is critical. I've had clients walk in there, wait 6 hours, and then say, oh, the office is closing, come back tomorrow.
Mm.
Yeah, always, if you have to go to the office, make an appointment.
847 says, and I know I got to hit a break here, my sister is disabled, gets SSI and SSDI. Do both of these benefits have the $2,000 account limit? If not, which one does have the limit? I'm new to this.
Okay, so two programs, SSI, Supplemental Security Income, you must be totally disabled and indigent. So for that portion of her benefit, she has a $2,000 asset cap. They don't count your house if you're living in it. They don't count one car. But any other asset, bank account, savings account, checking account, life insurance policy, if she exceeds $2,000, she'll lose her SSI portion. She's getting some SSDI, which must be pretty low because it'd be below the 967 SSI amount. SSDI is not means tested because you paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
You worked, you paid those OASDI taxes, so you bought the coverage. So they don't ask you how much money you have in the bank for disability. It's just, do you meet the medical test or not?
Okay. All right. Jeff, I'm going to give you a little extra time here because we've got some callers and texters coming in. RKBlegal.com, 312-431-1000. You okay to stick around a little longer?
I'm good for as long as you need me.
Okay. We'll take a quick break. We'll get some of your questions and calls and hopefully get to them soon on WGN. Jeff, you got a good HVAC system? You feel cool in your house during the recent heat wave?
No, I'm actually going to contact that website our upstairs is really, really hot.
Getacomfyhome.com, Jeff, write that down.
Got it.
Jeff Raven joining us. He does SSDI, SSI, and we got some questions. And let's go to Cindy first. Hey, Cindy, you're on WGN.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I don't want to hear about your complaints about heat. I left Chicago 5 years ago for Las Vegas, and this is really hot. My question for you is, it's complicated, but you're used to complicated questions.
I bet he is.
Our 38-year-old son, who has Down syndrome, was deemed eligible on his own work record by the time he was 22. And then he qualified for Medicare, and because he is poor, he is dually eligible with Medicaid and Medicare. When we moved to Las Vegas, that was when my husband retired and started taking his retirement. At that time, we knew our son should be getting half of my husband's, not in addition to what my son gets, but to make up that half amount. And I'm supposed to be getting that. And so for the last 5 years, Social Security has refused us. We have talked to our congresspeople, our senators, and my husband's kind of like Felix Unger. He's got those numbers right in place, and it keeps shooting back to us. And we did talk to one attorney in Chicago, and we were going to get charged $400 an hour. And then we did the math and said, well, that may not even be worth it. What do you folks recommend?
So my first question is, why has Social Security told you that your son is not getting what would they call disabled adult child's benefits?
They've never given us a reason. In all the paperwork we get, they've never written a reason. They've done the numbers. We've even explained the Parisi ruling, and they ignore that. We are below the family maximum, but we don't get a reason. We get mail once a month, and it doesn't say anything to that effect.
So let me just describe the program that you're talking about so that everybody understands. We've talked about SSDI and SSI. There is a program that says if you become totally disabled before age 22 and you have a parent who is on either Social Security retirement or Social Security disability, or who passed away covered under the Social Security Act, you can receive SSDI based upon your parent's account. And you're correct, it's 50% of the retired parent's benefit amount. So what may have happened, some people think this happens automatically, but you actually have to go and file a new application for disabled adult child's benefits when your husband hits retirement age. In the past, Social Security used to do this automatically. Then they went to a system which was much more onerous and said, no, your son may be 40 now, and he's been on disability for 20 years, but we want you to prove again that he became disabled before age 22. And that may be where you're at. With the last Commissioner O'Malley, they tried simplifying that again. But my guess is the cleanest way to do this would be to file a new application for disabled adult child's benefits based upon the parent's account. Try to gather up those old medical records from before age 22, although Social Security will still have access to them, and try to prove the application. It doesn't just happen over there. You do have to file an application and go through the process.
Cindy?
Yes, and I will tell you this. When you go there to Social Security, to the Social Security office, and you explain to them and you give them all the paperwork, his work records, that you know he has made only this amount of money, no one expresses that to you.
Yeah.
So because my husband has pulled out every one of his few gray hairs, would it serve our purposes to get in touch with your office and have you folks help us with that? And again, I'm in Nevada. Can you do that for a Nevada person?
So one of the nice things since the pandemic is Social Security hearings with judges have migrated from in-person hearings to Microsoft Teams or the telephone, but we prefer Microsoft Teams. That has allowed me to be able to represent people really anywhere in the country because we don't have to fly out to do the hearings. So, yes, we can help you. Yes, I'd want to look more into this. So just call our office, ask for Kelly. Kelly is my magnificent intake person who is probably going to be overwhelmed this week. But be patient. She will get back to you, and I will step in and try and help her. And we'll get some basic facts from you, and then we'll see if we can help out.
Cindy, you got the number handy or no? Do you want me to give it to you a couple more times?
Give it to me one more time.
Okay.
I am also blind, so I've got like a group home here.
Oh, wow. Okay. You can always, yes. Eli, make sure that she gets it after we're done with the call, but it is 312-431-1000. 312. 1000. Yep. 312-431-1000. Cindy, call.
Okay. I got it.
Okay, ask for Kelly, and then remind Kelly that you were on the radio with me. I don't know if I have any pull. I probably don't, but maybe Kelly will be sympathetic to that and make sure you get all that you can, okay?
I'm from Chicago. I got a guy.
You got a guy. You know a guy. That's how we do it.
There you go. And Cindy, he has a lot of pull.
Oh, no, not really.
Thank you.
Gene from Indiana, unfortunately, we're not going to get to your call. Maybe you could follow up with the office afterwards. Or Gene, maybe stay on the line here. Maybe we can get you an answer here during the news break. Jeff, I got to go. This was excellent stuff. I know you're going to come on again. I'm going to bring you or one of your associates on Your Money Matters, too, because a lot of people have issues. I mean, Cindy, that was a perfect call, right? These things used to happen automatically. Now they don't. What do we do? We're being told nothing. These are the people that should be calling you. And even better yet, right when you need to apply for one of these things, give you a call and you'll help people out, right?
We'll be there and we do our best to give everybody 110% effort.
I believe it. RKBlegal.com, 312-431-1000. Jeff, great to meet you. Talk to you soon.
This was a pleasure and a lot of fun. I look forward to seeing you again soon, John.
Quick break. Then news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.
Get away to Grand Rapids.